had any doubts? Have you ever thought, oh, maybe I've made the wrong decision? Have you ever thought about running away, leaving the convent, or
jumping over the wall? Not quite. I've always felt that I'd done the right thing. Remember when I was a novice? This is before you actually, you know, become a maker of vows, and it was very, very hot in France. And we had a much heavier sort of habit. And I remember getting up. We used to get up very early. And it was really, even at 6 o'clock in the morning, it was hot. And putting all this stuff on me. And I said to myself, what in God's name am I doing here? I remember that. And then suddenly realizing that, you know.
Have you ever doubted your faith at all?
Not, you can't say doubting my faith. I suppose I'm lucky enough that I was brought up in a very, very Catholic family with lots of people who were full of faith. I think underneath, even though there have been sort of moments when things were very difficult, I've never really doubted it. Mm-hmm. It's there all the time. You see, faith is a gift. You can't just sort of give it yourself or sort of buy it or, you know, put it on the shelf and say, that's my faith, it'll stay there. No, you have to keep it alive by the kind of way you, by your prayer, really, by your relationship with God, which is what it's all about.
What's your average day like then here at the convent?
My average day. I get up at about 20 past six.
It's very precise.
but my clock goes off. And I come down and I open up here, feed the cats, got two pussy cats, have my breakfast, do an hour's prayer in the chapel. We sing our Lord's, our morning prayer at 8:15. And then at 8:30, I prepare. We have the guests have their breakfast at 8:45, so I help with that. We usually have somebody who helps does the breakfast. I look at my email to see if anybody wants to come in. We have mass at 10. Usually, when we come back, if the mass is here, people come in and have coffee, and I talk to them. Then I usually do, the post comes in, there's work to be done, know who's coming, who's not coming, answering the phone, that sort of thing. We have our lunch at 1:00. Usually we sit around and have a sort of reading session after lunch. Go for a walk and say my rosary, come back, we have a break for tea at 4:00. We have our evening prayer of Vespers at 4:30 and pray again a bit. Yeah, people come and talk to us, that sort of thing. The basic rhythm would be an hour of prayer, the Lord's and your Vespers, your rosary, and then any other time you like. But in between, the whole idea of prayer is you pray quietly on your own as well as you can. That's not easy. And then when you meet people, you know, you try to see God in them or Christ in them and give them what you feel is the best that you have. And you see, we are sisters of Saint Martha, which is hospitality, opening your house to people. And everybody is welcome here, you know, some even if they can't pay, even if they can't, you know.
What's the toughest aspect of what you do, would you say?
Community life. Living with people that you haven't chosen to live with. Mm. You know, you marry someone because you love them, you have your family because you're blood related. That's the most difficult, and we're all different, but it's
like a holy flat share.
I could say it like that, all right.
Do you squabble over who's had whose milk?
Not quite. you know, like anybody else, you don't agree with everybody all the time. Yeah.
I know, but you're nuns, so it's not like you can have a row. You can't have a Barney, can you?
Of course you can have a Barney.
Can you?
It's natural. It's like you do in a family. But you wouldn't go to bed without making it up. The whole point is that any kind of relationships are not always easy, even in a married couple. You have your ups and your downs.
Oh, you're telling me.
Are you married?
I am married.
Oh, you know then, good. But, and that's part of the richness of it, isn't it? Mm. Because every time you have a difference of opinion with somebody and you work it out, or even if you walk away and say things you shouldn't say, which can happen, you come back and you make it up and you sort of grow closer to the person, don't you?
How do you choose which congregation you're going to join them when you become a nun?
That is the difficult bit. Well, I was looking around for when I was, you know, quite young, and I felt that there were lots of sisters. I was come from Ireland, lots of sisters who were there. And I met this, I was in contact with a priest who was helping me to sort of make sure that I was doing the right thing. Discernment is called. And I met this sister who had come over from France to sort of see if anybody wanted to join this order. And again, I suppose, you know, when the person you marry is the right one, we hope.
Yeah. You find the right fit for you. Yeah,
yes, exactly. And I think it was the right fit for me. We, as a sister, we're the Sisters of St. Martha, who have now merged with another congregation because nuns are getting fewer and fewer. As you know, we're living in a world where nobody wants to enter convents or even, you know, do something with their lives. Nobody wants to make a long-term commitment, even a marriage, you know.
Although saying that, one of the reasons why I wanted to come here today was because the Catholic Church recently announced that the numbers of women signing up to become nuns is at an all-time high for 25 years. They're not massive numbers, you're right. I think it was 45 new nuns last year. Yeah, yeah. But more than we have seen. What would you put that down to?
I think if you look back at the history, there's been ups and downs all the way through, and the way the world is going, people are getting a bit tired of everything. There's too much of everything. We're going through an economic this, that and the other. You see the most appalling things happening all over the world, and people think, well, what's it all about? You know, there are very few. We don't know whether these people who have entered a convent are going to stay, because it's not easy, you know.
No. So are you saying in a way they're trying to escape from the modern world?
No. I think they're trying to make sense, and they're finding there isn't any sense because they haven't probably found someone to love, or they want to do something that's going to make the world a better place. Don't you ever feel like that? I shouldn't ask you a question.
Oh, no, you cannot. Who's interviewing who here? You can ask that. No, I do often feel like that. Yeah. I think a lot of people do. I think, well, you say the way the world is going, a lot of people do despair.
I know.
About things that are happening in the world. What is the answer?
I don't know. We haven't got the answer. Do you know, the thing you've got to hold on to is that God is in his heaven. He knows what's happening to the world. We would probably think, well, if I was in charge of the world, I might do something different, you know?
Well, that's what people say, don't they? People say, if there is a God, why does he allow such terrible things to happen?
Because we have free will, and we're weak people, and we do it ourselves. I remember somebody asking Cardinal Hume, your fellow Cardinal Hume, you know, can you explain the problem of evil? Why do good people suffer, you know? And have you got any answer to that? And he said, just look at your crucifix. You see, when Christ was on the cross, he didn't say, okay, I'm not going to stay up here, I can get down. He stayed there, didn't he? He accepted to suffer. And we are part of that sort of redemptive suffering when we suffer as well. But of course we question it. Mm. You know, all these people in
Tunisia.
Yes. Yeah. But you look at the other side. Okay, they're dead. They have no more life. But I hope they've gone to somewhere wonderful. Because I believe that, you see.